Hello everyone, welcome to Melbourne City Council. It is our Future Melbourne Committee meeting number 9 on Tuesday the 20th of May 2021 and we're kicking off at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and all members of the public. Thank you for attending our meeting tonight and particularly those attending virtually. The City of Melbourne respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which the City of Melbourne is gathered, the Bunurong, Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. The City of Melbourne is absolutely committed to our reconciliation journey, and we believe that strengthening relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples has benefits for us as individuals, as a city and as a state. As part of our efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, council and committee meetings will be held virtually until further notice. During the period 1 May 2020 to 26 April 2022, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to attend in person. By providing the public with live streaming services, we are satisfying the public attendance test under the legislation during the prescribed period. This meeting is being streamed live, and the audio and video recording will be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be made available on our website as soon as practicable. Could everyone please check their phones so that we're sure that they're turned to silent or off? That would be fantastic. Thank you. The agenda this evening comprises 8 reports from management and 2 items of general business. No apologies have been received. Thank you, councillors. I'm advising members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour of it, that decision can be referred by a councillor to council for decision. It's time to address the disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a general or a material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, can you please disclose the nature and type of that interest prior to consideration of the item? Thank you, councillors. We are moving on to the confirmation of minutes of previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 8 held on Tuesday the 13th of April 2021. Thanks, Councillor Griffiths, and seconded by Councillor Doidge. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Are there any items arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss at this point? None, thank you. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's governance rules. In relation to agenda item 6.1, planning permit application, TP-2016-669/B, which is 268 to 270 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. We have requests to speak from Tim Retrott from Pro Urban and an item of correspondence from Lynn Simpson. In relation to agenda item 6.2, Ministerial Planning Referral ID 2020-7, which is 21 to 35 Power Street, Southbank, we've had a request to speak from James Goulding from SJB Planning and an item of correspondence from James Goulding. In relation to agenda item 6.3, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendments C393 and C394, which is Fisherman's Bend In-Depth Heritage Review, we've had requests to speak from Daniel Gardner, Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee, And we've had an item of correspondence from each of Tom Sperling, Charles Solwine, Chair of the Heritage Committee, Royal Historical Society of Victoria, Daniel Gardner, Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee, and Felicity Watson, who's the Executive Manager Advocacy for the National Trust of Victoria. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, which is Seafarers Rest Park Design, March 2021, we've had items of correspondence from Melinda King, Greg York, Ross Brewer, who is the Director of the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Southbank Promenade Landscape Upgrades, Community Engagement, we've had items of correspondence from Tim Brasher and Rowan Storey, who is the Vice President of Melbourne Heritage Action. And in relation to Agenda Item 7.1, Notice of Motion, Councillor Leppett, Horse-Drawn Vehicles, we've had requests to speak from Cassandra Westwood, Charlotte Cussell, Elizabeth Duggan, Elizabeth Viggers, Abs Harawi, Ben Schultz, Virginia Y, Lynette Freeman, and Kristen Lee, Campaign Manager, Melbourne Against Horse-Drawn Carriages. We've received 15 items of correspondence in relation to this agenda item. In relation to Agenda Item 7.2, Notice of Motion, Councillor Jamal Hakim, Supplying Free Sanitary Products in Council-Owned Facilities-Pilot Program. We've had requests to speak from Donna Stolzenberg, 2021 Victorian of the Year. We've had items of correspondence from Katrina Walker, Donna Stolzenberg, and Jane Bennett, who is the Chalice Foundation for a Positive Menstrual Culture. Submitters, you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is being considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee, and it is our intention to adhere to that 3 minute rule this evening, given the number of speakers that we have. What we do to assist you to manage time is there's a countdown timer that should be appearing on your screens, and it will count down for you, and at 2 minutes you will hear a bell. Thank you. And that bell signals that you have 1 minute remaining, and then you will hear that bell again at the end of your 3 minutes. If you could please finalise your presentation at that time, that would be most appreciated. Thank you, and respectful to all the speakers who are speaking this evening. In accordance with the Council's governance rules, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and at the end of this meeting for members of the public to ask questions to enable the public to continue to participate in future Melbourne committee meetings. Members of the public can either submit a question in writing or they can register to ask a question live via audio link. As at 10 a.m. today, we had not received any questions, but looking forward to that coming back alive again next time, and particularly if we can get together in person. Item six on the agenda, everyone, is reports from management. I'm calling on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Rees, to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the City Planning Portfolio. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. And there are indeed three reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. The first of those is Agenda Item 6.1, Planning Permit Application TP-2016-669/B for the property 268 to 270 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? I'm going to take that as a no, and I'll now call on Tim Retro from Pro Urban, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome to Town Hall, at least virtually, Tim. You have 3 minutes to make your presentation.
Thank you for that, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll jump straight to it. First of all, the applicant would like to thank councillors for having the opportunity to present tonight. And the applicant would also like to thank council officers for their commitment to working together on this project. It's been a long time in the making, and the applicant is very pleased with the strong recommendation of the officer's report, which provides a detailed outline of how highly consistent the proposal is with the relevant planning controls and policies for the Melbourne CBD. We do not propose to elaborate on these further in this forum. That's been covered in the officer's report. We will, however, mention a few things of note. In particular, the extensive work done on venue management and acoustic considerations, which are the main proponents of this proposal that ought to be considered. Each venue in the premises has a separate venue management plan to ensure the venue operates effectively. The management plans have been reviewed by council officers and updated throughout the application process to ensure a desirable operational outcome. And the same goes for acoustic considerations. We note that the applicant has worked closely with an acoustic consultant at all times, and each venue has its own acoustic report with its own recommendations. The applicant listened to council's comments and updated the acoustic assessments to provide robust and clear findings to assist planning officers to make a considered decision. We note that the acoustic modelling carried out demonstrates that the level of noise from the music, patrons and plant will comply with the mandatory requirements of the EPA state environmental protection policies. We hope councils accept the rigorous methodology and hard work that has gone into ensuring that this proposal complies with the mandatory requirements. It's important also to note that the applicant is a reputable hotelier entity who owns and operates the Arbory down on Flinders Walk. Arbory has been a huge success and has always been well managed and has complied with the requirements of the permit for the duration of its operation. In summary, we respectfully submit that councillors support the application on the following grounds: full compliance with the Melbourne Planning Scheme, the extensive collaboration between council officers and the project team to achieve the proposal as currently recommended for approval, the strong supportive recommendation in the council officers' report, the detailed venue management plans for each separate venue, the detailed acoustic plans and the compliance with the relevant state policies, and the reputation of the hotelier entity who operates the successful Arbory Bar. We would like to again thank councillors for the opportunity to present this evening and respectfully request you support this proposal, a proposal that will go a long way to assist in ensuring the Melbourne CBD returns to its former bustling vitality in a post-COVID world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim Retro. Any questions for Tim? No. Okay, in that case, I am going to move a motion which should be appearing shortly on the screen here in the council chamber. I'll just wait for that to come up and check that it is the right one. It is indeed. I'm looking for a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I'll speak now in favour of this motion. This is an application to amend an existing planning permit seeking approval for the use of the land at the site 268 to 270 Lonsdale Street. The proposal seeks permission for a ground and first level bar that will be open from 7 a.m. to 3 a.m. That will be open 7 a.m. to 3 a.m. with a maximum of 203 patrons, and a fourth level bar rooftop that will be open 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. with a maximum of 125 patrons. And both venues currently operate as restaurants with the same number of patrons and liquor license till 3 a.m. and 1 a.m. respectively. It is notable that the city has received 18 objections, and so I know I have looked at the application very closely, and I'm sure other councillors have as well. The key issues for consideration before us this evening is the appropriateness of the bar land uses and potential amenity impacts on the surrounding area. And noting that these venues are existing and in operation as restaurants with a late night liquor licence. In terms of the context in which the site sits, it is located in the capital city zone. It is in the retail core, and it is affected by the parking overlay PO1 and the design development overlay schedules DDO1, DDO2, DDO4 and DDO70. I'm happy to move the motion before us this evening because, as it is noted in the officer's report, the use of the land for a bar is consistent with the purpose of the Capital City Zone Schedule 2 and on balance would not result in any unreasonable off-site amenity impacts. It is notable, as we heard from Tim Retro, that this is a venue that would be run by the current owners of Arbory and Arbory Afloat, who I must say have done an exceptional job with that venue on the Yarra River and on the banks of the Yarra River. It was also notable to me that Jackson Clements Burrows Architects, or JCB, were engaged on this project. JCB do some absolutely exceptional work around Melbourne. And if what we have seen at Arbory and Arbory Afloat is anything to go by in terms of design aesthetic, I think we can look forward to some an exceptional architectural outcome and an exceptional bar and dining and hospitality facility at this site on Lonsdale Street. In terms of the amendment to the existing planning permit, it's, I think, notable the work that has been done by the City of Melbourne offices. So we have worked with the proponents to ensure that there is a proper venue management plan in place here for the entire building, not just for each of the venues. And I think that holistic venue management plan is important and does obviously help with the overall amenity and impact on the surrounding areas. I also want to highlight the noise conditions which the City of Melbourne officers have negotiated with the proponents that require background music limits on the rooftop bar. And then finally, I note that there's been some good work done around the entry and exit restrictions at this venue, and in particular when it comes to later in the evening, that Lonsdale Street and not Drury Lane will be the only permissible entry and exit point. And I think for folks who live along Drury Lane, who I know is where quite a number of the objections did come from, I do think that will be a significant improvement for the amenity, for their amenity. So for all those reasons, I'm happy to support the motion that's on the screen before us. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. That was a very thorough outline, so I don't have anything to add. I'll merely reiterate that the conditions and the history that's set out in the report makes the case well that the off-site amenity impacts can be managed, and so a permit should issue.
Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I'm looking around. I do a lot of twisting in this room. I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item is 6.2. That is a Ministerial Planning Referral ID-220/2020-7 for the property 21 to 35 Power Street, South Bank. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? Given the recommendation is from officers is to not support, I actually would request a presentation from officers, and I call on Larry Parsons, Practice Leader, Land Use and Development, to make a brief presentation to us.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. The first slide, please. The next slide, yeah. So as you see, this is in the block bordered by City Road, Power Street, and Queensbridge Road. Next slide. The yellow arrow shows that it's a vacant site. The tall tower above it is the Prima Pearl Tower, and we have the three towers to the right on the slide of Freshwater Place. The low site below the yellow arrow is the Beulah site, which achieved a permit last year. Next slide, please. The site has an existing permit, which is the one on the left with the orange form. It's 215 metres high. It is for a hotel and residential proposal, which has already been modified in the past. The green on the right is the proposal. The height is lowered to 215 metres, but the floor plate has increased substantially, and it's an office building. And you will see in that slide before we move on an indication to the right of the green building of the towers for Beulah, the two tall towers, one of them to be the tallest in the Southern Hemisphere. And you'll see what looks like a smaller building on the bottom right corner. That is Hanover House, which is now being incorporated into the Beulah site. And they plan to move their second tower further towards that corner. Next, please. Here you'll see the comparison of the existing permit in the green outline, and the red outline is this proposal. It is an incorporated document, that is, it's cutting a hole in the normal controls of the planning scheme to propose whatever is the actual proposal in this case. You can see the setbacks to the sides boundaries have been reduced significantly compared to the green outline we previously had. They are now 5 metres each side. Next, please. Sorry, could we go back one for a minute? And you'll also see the change in the floor plate area. The original proposal is 1,286 square metres. It's now 1,648 square metres. Next. Here's a render of the tower with the yellow arrow, and the one to the left is obviously Prima Pearl existing, and the low building to the right is the current Hanover House, where the second Beulah Tower will come. Next. The ground floor, there are changes in that we now have a large foyer space, so the access through the site to the top, what is the top left-hand corner to Freshwater Place, is through the foyer, through a generous space. There is a setback to Power Street on the bottom of the slide. There are some recommended conditions to make that more activated, and also for the foyer. Next, please. There is car parking. It is reduced from what was the existing permit, but there is still 3 levels of car parking fronting onto Power Street. Next, the standard office floor plate. Next, just some elevations. And next, the entry from Power Street. You'll see that sort of forecourt setback. Next. The interior of the foyer space with the to the rear, to the back, is the link through to Freshwater Place. And finally, next, the shadow diagram, which has been talked about, because obviously with a lower building, the shadow in blue is moved further away from the shrine. However, this is only occurring at 4 p.m. in winter, which is not a planning control time. And the dark shadow is the Prima Pearl shadow, which exists. Next, that is the final slide. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Larry. Any questions for Larry Parsons? No. All right. Well, thank you for presenting for us. I now call on James Goulding, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome to Town Hall, James, at least virtually. Please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and good evening, councillors. My name is James Goulding, and I'm from SJB Planning. This evening, I'm speaking on behalf of the prospective developer, GL Investments. As you no doubt have anticipated, we're disappointed with the officer recommendations. For the reasons I'm about to outline, we respectfully request the committee not adopt the recommendation. As Mr Parsons has just highlighted, there is an existing and live planning permit for the site. And as he's highlighted, this permit is not compliant with a number of the built form controls for towers within DDO10, including the floor plate control and side and rear setbacks for above podium for the tower. It's also non-compliant with the seriously entertained DDO1 controls, which relate to urban design matters. Our client's objective is to deliver a building that achieves a greater level of compliance with DDO1 and DDO10 when compared with the approved building. And with that, to deliver an A-grade commercial office building that realises the original vision for the Freshwater Place precinct. As a result of the amended proposed design by Grimshaw Architects, a Tier 1 architect, The design achieves the following: an A-grade commercial office space with floor plates at the required size for future A-grade tenants, albeit they're at the lower end of the scale acceptable to such tenants. It also meets the modified requirements for tower setbacks, which results in a 20 metre separation with Prima Pearl. As Mr. Pass pointed out, this is a 5 metre reduction to the approved building, although with the lower height of the proposed tower, it does provide uninterrupted views for the upper levels of the Prima Pearl building. The existing 10 metre separation to the blank wall, being the lift core of Freshwater Place, is consistent with the approved development. 10 metre separation to the approved building at Hanover House remains and is consistent. And as Mr. Parsons pointed out, this site's been purchased and the tower approved is not intended to be acted upon. We say the setbacks and resultant separation will not result in adverse amenity impacts on the adjacent buildings. We also note that the council's urban designer comments positively in terms of DDO 10. Ultimately, we say the proposal results in meaningful net community benefits for all Victorians. These include, but are not limited to, reduced building height, which reduces the overshadowing to the shrine, inclusive of the Western Memorial Gardens, provision of A-grade commercial office space, a significant plur of public access through the site, a public plaza to Power Street with opportunities for activation and landscaping, significant reduction in car parking. Accordingly, we respectfully request the committee not to adopt the officer recommendation and to turn support our client's proposal as submitted.
Thank you very much for that, James. Are there any questions for James from councillors? All right, thank you for taking the time to present to us this evening, James. I would now ask for Jodie to please put a motion up on the screen and I will wait for that to come up. I'm just rereading it to make sure we've got the correct wording there. Yep, that's correct. And I'm looking for a councillor. So I'm going to move the motion that is appearing on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. This particular site and this particular permit has quite a long history to it. Actually, the existing permit dates back to 2013. So this has been knocking around in the planning system for 8 years. And if you take into account the Freshwater Place overlays that existed previously, it goes back even further. I don't mind saying that this is an application which I have really agonised over, and I'm sure other councillors have as well. We do very much, when applications come before us at the city, like to be able to support them when we can, because obviously we do want to see new buildings and development proceed in our city. But unfortunately, all things considered, I think this is an application which I struggle to support. It is correct that the previous application before us was for a building of some 273 metres in height with a floor plate of about 1,286 metres, and we've now got square metres, and we've now got a building before us that's 215 metres with a floor plate of 1,646 square metres. So we've now got a building before us which is shorter but is wider. And I guess the key issues that are before us in terms of this new application go to the setbacks that are part of the new design, and also the activation of the building at the ground level. I agree with the submission of James Goulding that Grimshaw are indeed excellent architects, Tier 1 architects, and have done excellent work around Melbourne, but there are some features of this application which are particularly challenging. It is true that this application before us is for a site-specific planning scheme amendment, which was lodged with the Minister for Planning, and so it has been referred to us for comment. So we're not making the decision here this evening. We are actually making a comment about it, which will then be referred to the Minister, who is the ultimate decision maker here. It's also the case that C270, which sort of sets out built form controls in the central city, or at a high level certainly does not apply in this particular application because the application predates C270. However, even if we are assessing under an incorporated document and one where C270 does not apply, you still need to consider the background controls in the planning scheme. And I think it can be fairly said that this particular application does unfortunately fall well short of the built form controls that would apply if this were a normal planning application. And as I have flagged, I guess the most significant incursion the most significant areas in which this application falls short relate to the setbacks. So DDO 10 would require a 12.9 metre setback from the boundaries for this application. The existing permit for the tower has a 9 to 10 metre setback. The permit that we're being that is before us this evening has a 5 metre setback from the boundary. And when you're talking about towers that are in excess of 200 metres, those setbacks are very important, and it's important that these really tall towers do make space for each other to breathe, particularly when you're talking about a really densely built part of our city. In fact, the most densely built part of not just Melbourne, but I think Australia, as you've got through here in South Bank. So when you're talking about a 5 metre setback from the boundary, that is extremely tight, and I think for that reason is alone, but for some others, which I'll come to, is something that I would say, therefore, we cannot support. There are also some design features of the application, particularly at the ground level, which I think are of note, and which I would hope that when this then goes to the Minister for final consideration will be something that will be taken into account, and something which I hope the applicant can easily move on to amend. So in particular, it would be good to see more activity happening on this site at the ground level. It would be good to see more retail street activation in the foyer and along the street frontage. The setback with the large foyer, it should be easy to include an updated design which has more active uses of that foyer and just generally will activate the street in a way which we like to see, not just in South Bank, but across the entire city. It's also notable that we still have three levels of unsleeved car parking as part of this application. We do like to see car parking sleeved in the city and in South Bank at least, where there's problems with underground car parking. So again, this should not be difficult for the applicant to amend as part of the next round of considerations with the Minister. So again, I would, we do like to get to yes in Melbourne. We would like to see a development go ahead on this site. I certainly would, as the planning lead, and so I would encourage the applicant to take on board the officer's report and the recommendations here. I would encourage them to take on board the comments that will be made by councillors in the debate this evening, and I'd encourage them to look at these issues and work towards an application which the Minister can support and which will lead to an outstanding development going ahead on this site. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. I completely agree, and I'm sure there will be some spectacular urban design and development on this site in future. but how we get there is still a vexed question. Of course, the reason we're looking at a site-specific planning scheme amendment is that this application, were it to be lodged under the scheme, would be prohibited. But let's not make that a mark against the applicant either. Compared to the application that does have a permit that could be acted on, even though we've heard tonight that it won't be acted on, there are some significant improvements. But the Minister is the one who has set up the Section 20 Part 5 process and has referred the incorporated document to the Council for comment. And it is an interesting question as to whether or not those improvements to what's currently permitted warrant the site-specific planning scheme amendment. And we should be respectful and clear in our response to the Minister that while there are many aspects of the application that are good, it would be a precedent that we can't live with for the broader central city, if I can put it that way, when you consider the setback, the setbacks of the tower above the podium. This is a bridge too far. And whilst I can understand the arguments, and we hear them from applicants time and time again about what it means and to get A-grade office floor space into the central city and the minimum floor area that's required to do that, we do have central city built form controls for a reason. We've tested these ad nauseum through panel to not distinguish between residential and non-residential floor uses. We have these controls in the scheme for a reason. And so if we're going to turn off those controls, we need that threshold for public benefit to be extraordinarily high. We're nearly there, but we're not quite there. So respectfully, back to the Minister, he's asked us for our advice. I think we need to say that that's not quite the case here. We can't support it. Obviously, the Minister may disagree. So part two of this resolution is to say that if he does want to amend the planning scheme, there's a range of conditions that we'd like embedded into the planning scheme that can be followed. And we might well see an application very similar to the one in the papers approved any day now. Who knows? But we do need to have an eye to the administration of the scheme overall and what the precedent of approving the variation of setbacks beyond what would normally be permitted, what that would do. And so I think the recommendation that's been put to us is the right one. But as you say, Chair, I do hope the applicant keeps working with both levels of government to end up with a high-quality outcome for this part of our city.
Thank you, Councillor Lippert. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us is item 6.3, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendments C393 and C394 for Fisherman's Bend In-Depth Heritage Review. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this agenda item? I take that as a no, and I will now call on Daniel Gardner from the Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good evening, Chair. It's Jordan from Council Business. Daniel was unable to join us tonight.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I was looking forward to hearing from him. All right. Well, in that case, I'll now call on a councillor to move a motion. Thank you, Councillor Lippert. And I'm happy to second the motion. Would the mover like to speak to the motion?
I would be delighted. Thank you, Chair. This is another exciting heritage review that we're looking at, and even though it is a small number of places compared to some of our other heritage reviews, those places are large and complicated, and this is actually the biggest industrial heritage review that the city has ever conducted. And it will be one of the largest in local government anywhere, I believe. So this is unprecedented work. It is incredibly exciting work. And first and foremost, I want to thank our team for taking us through it. Biosys has done some extraordinary work for us, and it's been peer-reviewed in all but one of the cases, and I do hope that that last case will come back to us soon so that we can add that to the heritage overlay and begin that process as well. But this is the most rigorously tested and rigorously reviewed set of buildings of any of the heritage reviews that we have done. And so we know that going into this process, we are sitting on an incredibly thorough evidence base to ensure that those three sites for local significance will be well defended at any panel that might come, but also that any applications to the Victorian Heritage Council for the VHR will have a very strong evidence base there as well. It would have been great to hear from Danny, as you said. I want to thank everyone who's made a submission. The submission on the Westgate Bridge was wonderful and heartfelt, and the social heritage of that place, not to mention the engineering heritage and all the reasons that that site must be on the State Heritage Register, are so compelling. This is a site that is incredibly important to so many people, not least of which the families of the men who were killed on site. But that is just one of the sites we're talking about today. But when you look at the incredible histories that have been put together and compiled for us, we just know that Fisherman's Bend has got some of our finest heritage fabric in the city of Melbourne. And as we renew Fisherman's Bend with 80,000 dwellings, 80,000 jobs, conserving the best of the heritage of that area is only going to make that urban renewal even stronger. And so this is an absolutely pivotal part of every piece of planning that we and the state are doing in Fisherman's Bend, and it's only going to lead to even stronger outcomes. So I'm only too delighted to be moving this motion, and I'm sure we'll be back in this place considering where the local heritage review we'll get up to in terms of the planning scheme amendment, but I certainly hope that that process goes well. And thank you to all submitters. Please do make a submission during the exhibition process as well.
Thank you. And can I just ask Councillor Support to please put the motion back up on the screen? Thank you very much for that. I'm also delighted to speak in favour of this motion. In terms of Australia's industrial history, there's probably no area that is as important, as significant as Fisherman's Bend. It is, of course, the place where the Commonwealth Aviation Factory was located, where they made planes that flew in World War II. It's the site of, was the site of the Holden Factory, where the first Holden rolled off the line in the late 1940s to be greeted by Prime Minister Ben Chifley. And it is the site where Vegemite is made, much to the joy of millions of Australians who enjoy our world-famous spread every morning. And so this very, very special precinct is one that needs to be properly protected. Can I also thank the City of Melbourne team who have worked long and hard on this project, starting with Emma Appleton, but also including Tanya Walkenberg, Molly Wilson, and many others in the City Strategy team. Can I also acknowledge the lengths and depths that the team has gone to on this project? So historians have been engaged, there's been site visits. We should also acknowledge the cooperation of many of the property owners who opened their factories to us, allowed us in to visit them so that we could properly document and make the case for this application. I think it is important for people to be aware that heritage doesn't just apply to old buildings. You know, I think when people think of heritage listings, they think of old colonial buildings. But it's not just the age of a building that is taken into account around heritage listing. There are other important factors, such as the social importance or significance of a particular site. And certainly in terms of social impact, you'll find that many of these sites that are currently subject to heritage protections tick the box and more. Whether that's the Westgate Bridge, which was so significant for Melbourne and the story of Melbourne in terms of opening the western suburbs of the city up to the central city. Of course, as Councillor Leppard has flagged, also the site of Victoria's worst ever industrial accident with 35 lives lost during construction. It could be another site such as the Vegemite factory, which was only built in the 1950s, but again, to do with its social importance to Melburnians and all Australians, and nonetheless significant. I also want to make the point that heritage protections do not mean that a site cannot be developed. We recognise here at the City of Melbourne that Fisherman's Bend remains a vital employment precinct. In fact, we've got an endorsed plan that sees this site, not only the greater Fisherman's Bend precinct, not only be a location for 70,000 new residents, but also an ongoing employment precinct employing 70,000 jobs. So we actually want to see investment made in Fisherman's Bend so that it continues to thrive as an employment precinct. And that will mean further investment hopefully happening on some of these sites that have heritage protections. So we want to see that further investment occurring, but we want to see it occurring in a way which is consistent with the heritage character and heritage protections on the site. But the good news is that that is very, very doable. It's very, very achievable. And we look forward to working with landowners to see that eventuate. The time is right for this project, with Fisherman's Bend being slated as the biggest urban redevelopment project in Australia. The biggest urban redevelopment precinct in Australia. So getting these new protections in place now is timely and appropriate, and I commend the motion to councillors and look forward to the next steps on this heritage journey. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak to this? Councillor Doige.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Thank you to the team who put work into this. And a special thanks to Danny Gardner and the Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee. I know Danny hasn't been able to speak, so I just wanted to say a few words in respect of him and his work. So many might not be aware, but it was October 15, 1970, at 11:50 a.m. When part of the Westgate Bridge came crashing down as it was under construction. 18 people survived riding the bridge as it came down, but another 35 were also killed. And there's been an incredible amount of work put into the Westgate Bridge Memorial by Danny Gardner and the rest of the committee. And this work's incredibly important. Many modern health and safety standards, as well as important industrial relations regulations, only exist because of the work that Danny and the Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee have done. A lot of what we enjoy today wouldn't exist without that work and everybody else who was affected by that disaster. When the bridge collapsed, they didn't at the time have the modern machinery available for the rescue efforts that we have these days. So it was actually the workers on site who had to move tons of collapsed steel and concrete and other debris in order to free survivors and recover the bodies of their friends and colleagues on that day. I didn't actually just finish that day. It went all weekend. And by the time it was cleaned up, everybody was accounted for. And when the workers finally came back to continue building the bridge, everybody was sacked and laid off and they had no jobs to return to. So there's a memorial plaque with 35 men, with the names of the 35 men that were killed on Pier 10. And that memorial was paid for by the workers on the bridge. Everyone, even up to the leading hands, put in a day's pay to have that memorial put there. So the fact that that's going to be heritage listed means so much to so many people. There's also another memorial rock with the name of Joe Owens, And that was paid for by the Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee. And Joe was killed in December 1972, so 2 years after the collapse, on Fisherman's Bend, but part of the rebuild of the Westgate Bridge. So the bridge is iconic to Melbourne, and not just because of its design and, you know, its service, but it is a monument to the construction workers and the unions that built it, and to the memorial, and to the, a memorial to the men and their families who were injured and killed building it. And again, many might not know this, but John Holland is the company who was building the Westgate Bridge, and they continue to build many construction projects around Victoria and in the city of Melbourne today. And many of their sites are not the safest, nor are they the most industrially sound sites, but they certainly wouldn't be where they are today if it wasn't for the work of Danny Gardner and the Memorial Committee. So thank you to them, and thank you for everyone who's been involved on this.
Thank you, Councillor Doige. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against the motion? Okay, in that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on the Lord Mayor to resume the role of chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. We're at agenda item 6.4, which is Seafarers Rest Park Design, March 2021. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? Nope, thank you. I'm calling on Ross Brewer, who is the director of the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network, who requested the chance to address the committee, to address us now. Ross, are you there with us?
I am indeed. Great. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, firstly, thank you to allowing the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network to say something this evening. And firstly, we'd just like to say well done to everybody on the community consultation in regard to this project, which has been excellent. And we believe that overall a good design has arrived from all of this. However, we do have a couple of concerns, and they are revolving around the Mission to Seafarers building. And these concern linkage, visibility and access. Now, everybody knows what an historic building this is, and it's lent its name to the Rivoli development, Seafarers. It's lent its name to the Seafarers Rest Park, and it's lent its name to the Seafarers Bridge. However, it must be able to be seen and accessed properly. And from the design that we have been shown on the bottom of your paper tonight, it seems that that is not quite the case. And it seems to be covered behind some trees and things like that. So you really wouldn't be able to see it necessarily from the river, and certainly even from the park, it's covered and sort of shunted to the back a little bit. It really does need to have this visibility and linkage to the park itself, we feel. The other side there is the ability to access the building. Now, the building will, in the future, have an entrance, we hope, leading towards the river instead of from Wurundjeri Way, which does need to change around. And again, looking at the building and the park, there is a road between the two, and we just want to double check that this has been looked at very carefully from a safety point of view, with people accessing the park and the building itself. And so what sort of safety and aesthetic design considerations have been taken into account in this particular basis? And finally, just another congratulations. We think the placement of maritime artefacts is really terrific. And again, we'd just like to make sure that these artefacts are closely identified, and hopefully with the addition of a Q-tag. And if there's any help that the network can do to support this identification, we'd be only too pleased to help out. So, again, thank you very much indeed for the time I was allowed tonight.
Thank you, Ross. That was very interesting. And just to follow up, I'm looking to Mark Allen. We may need to take it on notice, but just interested whether you had any immediate thoughts on that safety issue that Ross was referring to in terms of the interface between... You may not, Mark, but I just thought I'd see. No, we'll take that on notice. Certainly look to address that as we go forward with the project. Ross, thanks for raising it and bringing that to our attention. I'm going to move this motion, and I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Leppett, thank you very much. Well, we know across council efforts that the ability to improve public open spaces and introduce more green open spaces is a key priority for the city. And that's a key reason why I'm really delighted to be moving this motion this evening. Council does have a renewed focus and ongoing investment into open spaces and the way that we're able to present those open spaces to reflect their uses in the past and the uses today. And I think with this design, we also see flexibility and capacity for uses into the future. This is a part of our river network on the North Bank, which is much neglected, I think, and which we are seeing a renewed interest from private sector, from local government and from state government in how we continue to invest in orienting the city to the river, and how we make sure that that interface is as engaging, is as activated and is as reflective as possible. And I see all of those elements in this design that we're considering this evening. The celebration of our maritime history that Ross alluded to and which is reflected in much of the community feedback is a strong feature of this positioning, particularly with the heritage, and I believe first in the world, bless you, mechanical crane used to move goods from and to boats that would have been alongside the wharf there. So lots of maritime heritage which is reflected in the design. Pleased though as well that there will be references to our traditional custodians and their uses of this area over their 60,000 year history here in this this space now known as the City of Melbourne, this place now known as the City of Melbourne, and also references to what we increasingly need, which are spaces for family, to be able to come for children, and places and spaces for people to be able to reflect and relax as well as to be active. It's not easy to combine all of these features into a single space, but the thoughtful way in which this area has been divided through design into different uses, I think, is excellent. We're looking forward to ongoing engagement with our community, particularly our traditional custodians, to make sure that we can reflect and acknowledge their heritage appropriately. Thank you very much to the Maritime Heritage Network for all of their input into this important place. And I want to thank our officers and the team involved in pulling this design together with all of those demands incorporated. And of course, Rivoli, who's been working very closely with our officers, will be delivering this project, and a great example of where we can work together and in partnership to deliver really valuable community outcomes. So delighted to see this project progress. Delighted to move this motion tonight. And over to you, Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I agree with that, and that was very comprehensive. So let me be brief in only adding a couple of other things. There is quite a residential population in the area already, and won't it be wonderful to have playgrounds and green spaces for people of all ages to enjoy. Residents of Sedley Street have been putting up with all sorts of disruptions over many, many, many years, not to mention the interesting ongoing battles that they have with helipads in the area, or used to have, I should say, and the delivery of the park, which won't be imminent, of course, but the delivery of the park is going to change the way that this community feels like a community, and I think that it's going to really improve the area in all sorts of wonderful ways. Lord Mayor's touched on the way that the team's done a remarkable job pulling together the different threads of heritage and having it reflected in the park, and I just wanted to thank Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network as well, and note that the Seafarers Building is, of course, a heritage-listed building, and until we know how a new entrance is going to be built into the side of the building at what's currently the rear and might later become a more of a major entrance, it's premature to say exactly how that entrance should be designed onto the park. But I'm confident that the design we're looking at today has more than enough flexibility into it to cater for future movements between the building and the park. And, of course, the view lines through to what is a remarkable building and a really important part of the city will remain strong. There's going to be hero views of all of these new buildings and not to mention the old buildings as well. So this has now been a thoroughly consulted on project and I'm looking forward to delivering it.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just a brief comment to commend the officers and all the work on this park. It is not often that we get a chance to design a park from scratch and build in the things and amenities for our community that work for our modern times. Particularly, I want to note and commend the efforts in the inclusion of accessible features to the park, a really important part of ensuring that all kids have the opportunities to enjoy our parks in our municipalities. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Councillor Kim. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Lelu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just want to echo the sentiment as well. Just wanted to say thank you also to all the people involved, Department of Treasury, Finance, and also River Lee. For what is going to be a great activation there. I know that one of our former councillors, Councillor Watts, you know, who would be very, very proud and would be speaking delightfully into this because knowing about seafarers was actually, and the maritime history was actually through her because she had an office with her for 4 years and the great insight from that, but also the Maritime Heritage Network is a great history, and remembering Melbourne is a port city that and has so much history behind it that I think this open space will do us justice. I hope that the history will be kept and told. It's so close to where you know where Melbourne began, and hopefully I'll be able to enjoy going down there because it seems like it's an absolute fabulous place, and any open space in Melbourne will be welcomed and greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Councillor Liu. Any other speakers to this motion? Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. We are up to agenda item 6.5, which is the Southbank Promenade landscape upgrades dash community engagement. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, thank you very much. I am going to move this motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion. Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Well, the significance of Southbank Promenade is well understood, and we can see it every day, even with disruption, how many people use this area from local residents through to commuter bicycle traffic and, of course, visitors, and one of those places, again, that has multiple uses for so many people. This has been demonstrated through the feedback that we've had from community members who have engaged with the plans through Participate Melbourne, and I want to thank everybody who took the time to give us feedback. That's most appreciated. We know that there are a number of pain points across this well-used area of our city, and the community in their feedback has reinforced to us the need to act to address those conflicts and issues. Thank you to our project team who have taken that community feedback, rolled it all up, spun it around, and then given it back to us with the proposal this evening for consideration. I'm supporting the team's conclusion that this proposal, which is a much needed expansion of the promenade, is a project that justifies the replacement of the existing non-compliant balustrades. It's a great opportunity to do that, that we can modernise the existing street lighting as a positive outcome, not just for safety but also for environment goals. I think we need to acknowledge that these works would and will only solve part of the problem, that there are longer term plans that will need to be undertaken for the final resolution. And part of that is providing alternatives. So at the moment, Council is improving cycling infrastructure in this area to provide a viable alternative to using South Bank Promenade for cyclists. We ultimately do have a vision for South Bank Promenade as a destination and not just as a thoroughfare. By acting on this feedback, we have an opportunity to start that renewal for South Bank Promenade and to improve it as a destination for visitors, locals and commuters. And for all of those reasons, I'm happy to move this motion, and over to you, Councillor Campbell, as seconder.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and I very much echo all of those sentiments. One aspect of this proposal that I particularly wanted to draw attention to was the nature of the community engagement, which I think was particularly impressive, and I thank the team for that. And it shows that the people who were consulted are particularly engaged with this precinct. A quarter of them visit South Bank Promenade daily, and although we know there are some pressure points there in relation to pedestrian and cycle access, both views were well represented. 85% of the contributions came from people who walk around South Bank Promenade, second to which the most common form of transport was cyclists, 43%. And perhaps most importantly, over half the respondents felt that the proposed design would increase the safety of South Bank Promenade. And almost a quarter said that they would spend more time on South Bank Promenade if the proposed works were carried out. With those findings, I am confident that this is part of a larger package of works that needs to be delivered in South Bank, but a very important first step. And for those reasons, I am very happy to support this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Are there other speakers to this motion? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd like to apologise to Denton Corker Marshall because while I'm going to agree with the motion, as I've given notice to our team, who I otherwise fully agree with, I do take issue with the way we've handled the heritage issues. I agree that the South Bank Promenade has no formal heritage recognition. And, of course, it's only been there for 30 years. The Deputy Lord Mayor has made an eloquent case today as to why heritage is not only a matter for age. But we don't take the view of the city that just because something doesn't happen to have statutory protection doesn't mean that it's devoid of heritage significance. The Westgate Bridge, for example, does not yet have any statutory protection. We've heard very clearly tonight why it does.
have heritage significance regardless and when we're pursuing it. When we did the heritage review for South Bank, we didn't go as early as 1991. We stopped at about the 60s, I think, from memory. The consultant did identify sites that would likely become candidates for heritage overlays in the future, and South Gate, potentially with its curtilage, which would be South Bank Promenade, was identified as a site that would be an obvious candidate for further exploration, but it was outside of the scope of the heritage study that we did. And we're just trying to get our house in order when it comes to heritage controls. There's so much to be done that we draw the line somewhere. So we're not looking at very modern buildings and built form in some areas when there are some areas of the city that haven't had their heritage controls updated for decades, for example. So that's why we didn't add South Bank Promenade or South Gate to the heritage overlay last year when we adopted the South Bank Heritage Review. But I just didn't want to let the moment pass without acknowledging that South Bank Promenade has heritage value. Design excellence that resulted in what's there at the moment may, in many eyes, be tired, as has been described here, and some of the original standard elements may have been removed. I don't think most have been removed, but may have been removed. I think that's an argument that can be made. I merely make the point that a major redevelopment of the Southgate complex is being proposed. This development will result in a complete makeover of the original building. Well, it might. We haven't assessed whether or not that will be the case. We don't make that argument in other parts of the city. Just because a new building's about to come online, it might make the public realm next to it look even more tired. So in anticipation of that, we'd better update it quickly. So I agree with the rest of the report. One of the reasons I called this matter in and asked for extra consultation or some public consultation on the plans in the first place was because I don't believe the heritage matters were properly prosecuted on the public record and consultants and interested parties able to have their say. I will now concede, however, that even though our heritage advocates are still not happy, the overwhelming response from all other users of South Bank Promenade and the public generally is that this is a project that should continue. And so those misgivings aside, and I couldn't let the moment pass without airing some of them tonight, I do thank our officers for some extraordinary work, and it is now evident that this is a project that the community is very much behind, and so I will support it in the form that's being put to us, and we should act on the permit.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Other speakers to this motion? Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I also want to begin by acknowledging and thanking officers for the work that's gone into this community engagement process and the evidence base it gives us to now move forward and get on with it. Indeed, South Bank Promenade is a part of Melbourne that we love so much, that is so well used, that it's become a problem for the city. It's an area which is subject to extreme congestion. Now, normally when we think of congestion, we think of, you know, Hoddle Street and Westgate Bridge and our road network, but this is a part of Melbourne where it's so loved and so used by pedestrians and so loved and so used by cyclists that we have congestion issues here. And that's why getting this feedback that we have, getting some of these design issues resolved, is such a positive thing, because it will allow us to now move forward. I guess we have already taken some steps in this regard around trying to address some of these cyclists and pedestrians issues. I noticed there was police have actually been down along the promenade with their speed guns, checking people for speeding. I'm a cyclist who goes through there quite a bit. I'm glad I wasn't cycling through there on the day that the police were out there with their speed guns. But they did actually pick up some people speeding, and I'm pleased that we're now seeing better behaviour from cyclists through there. I'm also pleased that we've got the new dedicated cycling lane through Linleith Avenue and through South Bank Boulevard, which will provide that alternative route for commuter cyclists through that part of the city. But the feature of the design, which I really wanted to single out, which the Lord Mayor has touched upon as well, is that 4-metre widening of the promenade, the upper deck, which will go a long way to alleviating, I believe, some of those congestion issues, along with some of those other design features, which will do some calming of cyclists through there, which again just will allow for more people to move through the promenade in a safe and enjoyable way. Can I just also conclude that talking about the tree replacement findings, and in particular that there'll be a staged tree planting proposed to replace existing trees that are in poor health. So, look, I am someone who actually very much likes the two rows of plane trees that are located through South Bank Promenade, but I do note that there are tree health issues with some of those trees, and look, I do ultimately accept the advice of our team that there's a strong argument for new tree species to be introduced here as part of our diversification strategy for Melbourne. But I say that noting that I do love the plane trees along this stretch, and I do hope those, as many that are in good health, can remain. On that note, though, I'm happy to support this motion before us this evening. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Just noting that as it widens, that doesn't give you more space for speeding on your bicycle, Deputy Lord Mayor. Thank you. Are there any other speakers to this motion? No, then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Well, item 6.6 is the new business concierge service. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this item? No, then I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion. Councillor Chang, thank you. And a councillor to second this motion. Councillor Louis, thank you. Over to you, Councillor Chang.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd first like to thank the officers of council for creating the concierge program last year to assist businesses in the CBD. I think it's allowed businesses to find out more information about what support they have through grants and other schemes to help them through the pandemic, and it's definitely delivered with over 10,000 inbound calls to the concierge service. And I'm pleased that the enhanced program is focusing on bringing new investment into the city through startups and new businesses, as well as going out with physical visits to businesses, which I think is very important for the mental health and well-being of business owners who are really struggling right now. So I'm proud to put this motion forward.
Thank you so much. Over to you, Councillor Louis.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Chang. You've covered a great deal of the stats. Impressive. During the most darkest times of 2020, right in the midst of COVID, more than 10,000 inbound and outbound contacts with businesses and inquiries, not only to provide businesses with what the City of Melbourne can support in terms of our grants that were available, but the ones that weren't successful, the officers were trained and they supported the businesses in directing them to state government grants and federal government grants that were also floating around at that time. But I think most importantly is that it's certainly been out of a lot of the services that the city provided in 2020, this one has certainly been one that has been applauded by many of the businesses for the fact that there were personalised calls, not just robo-calls, but personalised calls to businesses asking for their state of welfare, their individual state welfare and whether they needed any support. The officers, I think, on the front line of these calls were certainly did an amazing job in trying to hold hands of people that were literally desperate. I think last year, I've written last year off, 2020, I think most people have. It is definitely a time of desperation. But for people to have their life savings invested in small, medium or large businesses in the city of Melbourne, really, I think, treasure the initiative that the concierge service provided. But I think most importantly, I think, and I see the word enhance, I think once when the model from last year was fantastic, but the enhanced one will certainly cut through, I'll say red tape, but basically, rather than to make a call to 9658, 9658, and getting a very, very attentive officer trying to deal with multiple issues across the board. I think to have a person that personalise your business and able to basically your personal banker to be able to, within a call, one single phone call, can direct you to from planning to health to possibly even street activities, outdoor cafes, etc. But for the triage service last year, to be able to help provide the services to direct people that were desperate for money and direct them to grant. Unfortunately, not everybody's a winner, and not every applicant received funding. But I think, but for that, the people on the front line also provided, the ones that didn't get funding also provided the extra service of helping them direct their queries and their angst, I think, elsewhere to try and get a positive outcome for them. But anyway, I applaud certainly the chief executive, but most importantly, I think Katrina, Andrew, and Mark has been the front, and also the many, many hundreds of officers that have been seconded from all over the city of Melbourne to provide this service. I thank them from all the businesses that they've been interacting with. Thank you.
Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I want to echo those sentiments about the great work that's been done to date and then focus on an aspect of this, the enhanced aspect of the business concierge service that particularly delights me, and that's the focus on new business formation and opportunities for startups. As the City of Melbourne and the state and the country move beyond the devastation that the pandemic has brought, particularly to our city disproportionately, and as we look to build the sort of economy that provides opportunities for new businesses, we know that there is a critical opportunity for startup formation in our city, and we want to make it as easy as possible for those startups to create flourishing businesses in our city. We want to send the clear message that Melbourne should be the destination of choice for new businesses, that we will make it as easy as possible to do business here. We will provide personalised support. We will help new businesses identify opportunities, navigate hurdles, and we will minimise the cost of doing business by essentially holding the hands of those new businesses as they establish themselves to assist them get on their feet, because we know they've got a valuable part to play in our economic recovery, our economic growth into the future. And we know that there is a lot that our team has done to support businesses in Melbourne. And we want to extend that service to new businesses. As we look at opportunities for economic growth, we want to send the very clear message that Melbourne is the place for new businesses to establish themselves. And we will roll out the red carpet to make it as easy as possible. For those reasons, I support this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you to the mover and seconder of the motion. I'd certainly like to add my voice of thanks to everyone in our organisation who's been part of making this happen, for the CEO and the management team who came up with the ideas, but as Councillor Louis very clearly said, for all of the people who did the work and made the phone calls every day, which I'm sure at times wouldn't have been easy conversations to have, as was detailed, many people who were running small businesses in the city were under extreme stress last year. And so I know from conversations that I've had that this service was very appreciated last year, was a clear demonstration in the eyes of small businesses that we were supporting existing ones, and as Councillor Campbell's very correctly said, emphasises the importance of encouraging new businesses to spring up in the spaces that have been that have come about in the city. And I think it's also worth noting that the knowledge that our organisation, that Council has gained by having so many people having that direct conversation with business owners, has also filtered through, percolated through the kinds of discussions that we've been having this year as we plan our way forward out of COVID. And I'm sure that we wouldn't have that level of knowledge in the organisation if so many people hadn't been part of those conversations over the last year. And I think for that reason as well, that it's certainly worth supporting into the future.
Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you for the mover and the seconder. I will also thank for the officers for their work and the organisation for your work in quickly pivoting towards creating a concierge service during the pandemic. I just want to draw attention to one, I think, really additional critical component of this, other than the ones raised by Councillor Campbell and Councillor Griffiths, which is how we... Here we go. How's that? Perfect. Great. Thank you.
Ah, good. Okay.
All right to go?
Keep going, please.
No problem. So, and that is what I was coming to is an additional component of the motion and of this new concierge service is providing services to businesses in the way that they need them, and whether that's face-to-face, whether that's on the phone, or whether that's online. I think, importantly, many of our small businesses don't have the time to spend time on the phone, and having somebody come in person to see the issues that they are facing and support them is really critical. And also providing that opportunity in language. And so thank you very much, Councillor Lulu, for bringing that up as well and adding that to the motion. I will also be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hakim. Any other speakers to this motion? I was just going to add some comments. I agree with everything that's been said. I thank Councillor Chang and Councillor Louis for bringing this motion up this evening. But the biggest thank you, as many of us have reflected, is on the team who have delivered this program, from our CEO through to everybody who's on the phone, and delivered through our economic team led by Andrew Weir. This was devised and delivered in the most stressful, unprecedented time here in the city of Melbourne, mobilised to provide literally a lifeline for business owners who were struggling, and understandably so, given the economic devastation and uncertainty caused by the pandemic. So thank you very much. I've had the most incredible feedback from people who have used the service and continue to use the service, and the fact that we pirouetted from waiting for calls to come in to outbound calls at a time when people needed that support the most is a testament to what this organisation can do in responding at a time of need and a time of much distress. So thank you. Thank you very much. I believe that the program and our councillors have identified many aspects that have been worthwhile, all of which I agree. I really just wanted to note that this program has meant that by working with business owners, by bringing them information about the support available across three tiers of government at that time of complexity, it meant that in our local economy, we've been able to maximise the retention of investment through all those small businesses that were able to survive and keep going. And change their own business plans to be able to do that. We've been able to maximise the retention of staff where possible because those businesses have been able to keep operating, albeit in what in most cases was a completely different business plan. We've minimised damage to people, I mean damage that was caused by the distress and the uncertainty at the time, mentally. It was a particular time of anguish and anxiety, so I think really that toll on people has been minimised through the support of the Business Concierge program. And, of course, then that support to our economy more broadly, because it is far, far better to retain investment and people and businesses than it is to have to start from scratch. And, of course, we're seeing both of those. But the efforts of the Business Concierge team at both ends of that spectrum are really appreciated and something I'm pleased will be ongoing to help drive this economy through support for small businesses is absolutely vital. So well done. I'm happy to, of course, support this motion this evening. I'm going to put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. Well done. We declare that motion carried. Thank you. That brings us to item 6.7, which is the Municipal Association of Victoria State Council meeting, May 2021. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this item? No? Then I'm going to call on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Leppett, thank you. I'm going to second the motion. Over to you, Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. It's been 18 months since the Municipal Association of Victoria has met as a state council to debate sector-wide policy due, of course, to COVID. And perhaps because there's been such a wait, some of our municipal friends have taken the opportunity to load up the agenda with quite a few motions. We've been a little bit constrained in context. Our friends at Frankston have lodged 7, our friends at Brimbank have lodged 11. I think the board needs to rein that in. We've put 3 concise and very important, I think, motions forward for consideration at the May State Council meeting. One is on the provision of affordable housing, and I know that many councils will be having something to say about this. Now, this is a hot issue at the moment as the state considers its 10-year social and affordable housing strategy. And of course, as the entire sector figures out how to work with the state on the big housing build and the local government's own role in delivering housing on council land or working with the state to deliver housing on state land. And the debate that we had in this chamber last week is a good pointer to what we're doing in that motion, so I won't go into that now. Secondly, a motion calling on the recognition of the council-initiated planning scheme amendments that are economic enablers. And this is very important because councils across the state have planning scheme amendments that are designed to provide not just certainty to developers and all parties in the planning scheme, but to lift the economic opportunities and development across the state. But if the state only views council-led planning scheme amendments as economic inhibitors rather than enablers, we've got a little bit of an impasse. We need to measure the economic potential of these amendments and make sure that when we're all talking about using planning systems in economic revitalisation, that the state and councils are doing that together. We're not only in a situation where the state views its role as the enabler and views council as the inhibitor, we need to unlock this impasse. And so that's what that second motion is all about.
And thirdly, of course, the roadmap on environmentally sustainable design is something that many councils will have a lot to say about, but in short, this council, as would not be surprising, I would think, believes that that roadmap, the ambition that's set out there, is not very high, and that if we are actually going to meet not just Melbourne's emission reduction targets, but emission reduction targets from built form from across the state, we need to work with the state government to make sure that that ambition is realised. Not only leave these matters to national building code reforms, put them off into the never-never, but actually use our planning system to again provide certainty to developers and all parties in the planning system to make the most of opportunities in ESD, and again, look at this as an enabler, not an inhibitor, and put some ambition back into the roadmap. So that's the three items that we're proposing to take to State Council, subject to a vote here in this chamber now, and I commend those three motions and the omnibus motion that we are considering.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I endorse all of those comments, and as seconder supporting this motion this evening, just wanted to add that where we can coordinate advocacy and action across municipalities, we can bring attention and acceleration to positive outcomes for our communities, and that's why participating in the MAV meeting by proposing these three resolutions is absolutely worthwhile. I particularly, well, I like all of them, but I particularly like the affordable housing one. This is a time for scale. This is a time for joint effort, given the investment being made by the state government, and this is a time when we can make a significant difference on a complex issue that has been a conundrum for way too long. And this is a great opportunity for, through the MAV, for us to be able to act together. I want to thank our management team for pulling all of this together in this recommended motion this evening. But of course, I particularly want to acknowledge the efforts of Councillor Leppett, who is the Deputy Chair of MAV. And we're proud to have him there representing not just us, but all municipalities in the work of the MAV, but the effort that you've put in to help us produce what I think are three quality, not quantity, three quality motions for consideration is really appreciated, and I acknowledge that. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Then I'm going to put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thanks. We are moving on to agenda item 6.8, which is proposed travel by Deputy Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees and Councillor Rohan Leppett, Sydney, April 2021. Councillors, do we need a presentation on this item? Good. Not another one. Only joking. So we're going to, and I am, looking for a councillor to move this motion. Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. And a councillor to second the motion. Thanks, Councillor Lalu. Over to you, Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I think this motion is fairly self-explanatory, so I won't speak to it for very long. But note that there are a number of good reasons for the Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillor Leppett to go up to Sydney. Some of the things that they'll be looking at are achieving design excellence in planning and development, which is obviously important to our city as well, connecting open, green and recreation spaces to the community, successful implementation of major urban redevelopment projects and precincts, which is obviously something which is very much on our minds at the moment, and learning what we can from Sydney's recovery from COVID and what's been happening in the CBD in that city. Obviously, we need to learn everything that we can to make sure that we make the best recovery in the City of Melbourne that we can. And I've no doubt that the councillors and Deputy Lord Mayor will share the many thoughts and learnings that we've had down here as well. So I commend the motion and thank the Deputy Lord Mayor, thank Councillor Leppett, and thank the officers who will be going to be part of this, who are giving up their time to spread the good word about what we're doing in the City of Melbourne.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Councillor Lulu.
I also just wanted to echo in my thanks and wish the fellow two councillors safe travel. I hope, and it's just an example. I know we sometimes joke about Melbourne and Sydney, but it is a very collaborative effort. I note that, you know, we have in previous years when Councillor Rees and Leppett have attended, the information that they've brought back was a great knowledge to us, and that sharing, especially in times of COVID, when you know, Melbourne and Sydney are the two big engines of the Australian economy, and also for us to get back in track, we really do have to share information and also learn from each other. So while we joke always about, you know, the Melbourne-Sydney rivalry, this is another good example of how we come together in the time of need, share all this information, and I thank both councillors and wish them safe travel.
Thanks, Councillor Lulu. Would anybody else like to speak to this motion? All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Well, this concludes reports from management to be considered in open session. We do have two items of general business that we will now consider in open session. And the first one is item 7.1, notice of motion, Councillor Leppett, horse-drawn vehicles. It's you.
Yeah, thanks, Lord Mayor. Before we hear from submitters to this item, I know the council officers have received video presentations that contained offensive language that was deemed inappropriate for public broadcast. These videos were distributed to the committee prior to this meeting. I'm also advised that one of the submitters tonight may be presenting a video that contains a scene depicting animal cruelty. This video may be offensive or distressing for some of the people online, and so we're just giving you a warning that that video may be showed so that people can make choices. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, CEO. Thank you to all of the submitters who have been with us for over an hour and a half now. Thank you for waiting for these next two items. We do have a number of speakers, so just to remind you that we're going to keep to our 3-minute limit on presentations. Thank you. And we're going to get going, and our first speaker is Cassandra Westwood, who is going to present to us now. Cassandra, I hope you're still there.
Yes, I am. Hi. Thank you. Yes, as you mentioned, my name is Cassandra Westwood. I'm a resident of Southbank who works in the CBD. It'd be great if you could move to my first slide. Is the slide pack ready?
We can. Oh, can you see that, Cassandra?
Yeah, thanks. Good. That's perfect. Great. So, look, it's disappointing that after all these years, no action has been taken against horse-drawn carriage operators. They make a mockery of our laws and of the safety of road users and pedestrians. I've personally witnessed one using a mobile phone while operating his carriage, as you can see from the photos up on the screen. I mean, how outrageous. If you wouldn't mind moving to the next slide, you'll see I've personally witnessed them cutting in front of a moving tram and performing an illegal U-turn. I mean, look at that, it's so dangerous. I've seen them illegally parked more times than I can count. And there are a couple of examples on the next slide, if you wouldn't mind moving on. I've seen them booking rides out in the street. I've even been verbally abused and physically threatened by these aggressive carriage operators when I pointed out they were parked illegally. It's so inappropriate having horses, animals, on busy Melbourne roads. Horses flee when scared, and I've read about them doing this several times in the media. It's only a matter of time before someone gets killed because of this. These horse-drawn carriages are outdated, dangerous, and frankly embarrassing for those of us who are otherwise proud of our city. Council, how can we trust that you'll effectively look after an entire city if you can't even address this one issue? It's time to stop passing the buck. You need to work together with the Minister for Roads and Road Safety in order to finally get some traction on this very important safety issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Cassandra. We are now moving to Charlotte Cussell. Charlotte.
Good evening, Lord Mayor. It's Jordan here from Council Business. Charlotte Cussell and Elizabeth Duggan both have not joined us tonight.
Thanks for letting us know, Jordan. We're up to Elizabeth Biggers.
Thank you. So last week I submitted a question for the City of Melbourne, which was basically ignored with the responsibility shifted elsewhere. Can you please, you've got the second slide on. The incident that I wrote about last week where a horse-drawn carriage was parked in the bicycle lane has some video evidence, which I thought you would like to see. Can you please press play on the video? In the video, you can see a buzz whizzing past me at speed. You can also see quite clearly the carriage taking up the entire bicycle lane with the carriage driver standing on the footpath. Next slide, please. I have also included a photo of the location where you can plainly see the no standing sign that's on the left of the photo, the concrete dividers between the bicycle lane and the cars, and also the bend in the road, making the location of this incident even more dangerous. Please note that this occurred on Linlithgow Avenue, which is south of the river. Next slide, please. I often hear people say that horse-drawn carriages should be moved south of the river. So I want to point out this incident with the horse-drawn carriage parked completely in the bicycle lane occurred south of the river. No matter where the horse-drawn carriages are in the city, I experience the same issues. Next slide, please. I urge you to consider the seriousness of this safety issue, of the safety issues surrounding horse-drawn carriages before there is another death on Melbourne roads, possibly next time a human death. It's time to ban these archaic, dangerous, and cruel horse-drawn carriages. Can you please play the video again? Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. We are now going to hear from Abs Hawawi.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. So I've tried to submit a video as part of my submission instead of submitting a verbal submission, but unfortunately it was banned from being shown tonight due to the vile nature of how I was treated by the carriage operators. I've linked to the video in my submission that I would like to request the Lord Mayor and councillors to please view it, as well as a copy of the letter I received from the police about the incident confirming the carriage operator who was convicted as a result of the verbal and physical assault in the video. In the video, you will see that I was walking past the horse-drawn carriages with my now ex-partner on the 9th of December, 2018. And as we were walking past, she was filming the horses for her Instagram story and the operator asked us if we wanted a ride. Now we were quite against the horse-drawn carriages and we knew that it was actually illegal for them to be street trading in the city like that. So because of this, I told him that he wasn't allowed to do that, which he denied. I then asked for his details so that I could make a formal complaint to relevant authorities, which they didn't have. They didn't even have a registration plate considering they're classed as vehicles by Vic Roads. Anywho, to cut a long story short, three other carriage operators who were standing away from us and at their own carriages came and surrounded me, swore at me, threatened me and assaulted me. And then one of them finally grabbed me by the throat and pushed me backwards. The man who assaulted me was charged with a criminal conviction and a $3,500 fine on the 11th of July, 2019, which is in the letter the police sent me. These operators have also been seen by people punching and kicking the horses when they wouldn't respond to them. There are also other news articles online showing the operators abusing other people, as well as articles on many incidents where a horse has been injured by being hit by a tram as it was going past and dragged 2 meters. Even though it's a public business operating on our streets, the well-being of that horse is still unknown to this day, as they and their supporters believe that they have a right not to disclose the well-being of horses who have most likely been killed. We should have a right to feel safe in our city, and yet because of this incident and many others I have seen online, I can no longer feel safe to go to places that I usually frequent, because they are the same places that the carriages are usually seen at. My case isn't an isolated case. Many other people are also made to feel unsafe due to their behaviour and their actions, not just because they're abusive to the horses and the general public, but also because of how reckless they are on the roads. They blatantly break road rules. They operate on tram roads. They always do dangerous U-turns in the middle of tram roads. They slow down traffic, and many people have commented saying that they have been injured because they've been run off their bike lanes by the carriages, reckless and illegal driving. Their presence in such a big and busy city is dangerous, and their illegal practices are hard to police. They do not belong on our city streets. Thank you.
Thanks, Abs. Thank you for sharing your story. I'm now calling on Ben Schultz, who is our next submitter.
Hi, Lord Mayor. It's Jordan here from Council Business. Ben did not join us tonight.
Thank you for letting me know. Virginia, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go for it. Thanks, Virginia.
Dear Mayor and councillors, I wish to share two of my own personal experiences that are extremely memorable and which highlight the problems with having HGVs in Melbourne City. On the 15th of February 2016, I lodged a complaint with the City of Melbourne about an irresponsible horse-drawn carriage driver driving horses through busy Chinese New Year festivities in Swanson Street near the corner of Little Bourke, which was filled with huge amounts of noise, drumming, cymbals, firecrackers and thousands of people. The horses were stressed and frightened and could have led to a serious accident. I learned at the time the spokesman for the HGVs was Dean Crichton from Unique Carriage Hire. The name brought back a flood of memories. I had an unfortunate dealings with Mr. Crichton in a serious accident involving his horse-drawn carriage and my motor vehicle around 35 years ago. I was 21, starting my first full-time job, and was on the way to work, on the way home after work, sitting stationary at a red stoplight behind another car in Collins Street, and heard the sounds of horses' hooves racing behind me. I looked in the rearview mirror and saw two horses with a carriage attached, but with no driver. The horses were frantic and ploughed right into the back of my car with the full force of the carriage behind them. I drove a strong VW Beetle, however, the whole rear of the car, including the engine, was pushed in. It was a write-off. I got out and attended to the seriously distressed horses with another couple of bystanders. The HGV driver, who later identified himself as Dean Crichton, came running up about 5 minutes later. I asked him what happened, and he said that the horses had spooked and bolted. He'd lost control of them and thought it best to jump out of the carriage. I could not believe my ears. He could have killed many pedestrians. He was extremely lucky. My strong car was there to take the impact. Otherwise, the horses would have continued to hurtle down Collins Street. That night, he told me he was insured and the insurance company would pay for the damage to my car. In the days following the accident, I found out that he had lied to me. He actually had no insurance. He gave me his name, but his parents' phone number. And I called the next day to ask about his insurance and the process we needed to go through. It was then he told me he had no insurance because he could get a mate to fix my car. After many phone calls to try and organise things, he went underground and he was not contactable. His poor old parents told me they did not even know where to find him. As I'd only paid third-party fire and theft insurance, I was not able to fix my car and had to sell it for scrap. The Victoria Police told me they had no jurisdiction over HGVs, so they could not apprehend him. I was so young and had just started working, so I couldn't afford a lawyer. His horses were injured. My car was a write-off. He was lucky he did not kill pedestrians and damage the City of Melbourne property. He totally absolved himself of all responsibility for everything he did, hid behind his poor old parents and then disappeared, showing clearly he had no integrity, morals or ethics. I lived away from Melbourne for 14 years and I could not believe he's still around and operating 35 years down the track, and in addition, a spokesman for HGVs. These are two glaring examples that I've had personally. It's deeply troubling that these problems still exist and the conditions for these animals have not changed in 35 years. They should not be in the city. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Virginia. And again, thanks for sharing your story. I'm now calling on Kristen Lee, who is going to present on behalf of Lynette Freeman.
Hi, I'm presenting a short video on behalf of Lynette Freeman.
tram tracks on St Kilda Road, biking and kicking violently. And as we were watching, we saw something get ejected from the carriage, or what looked like was a carriage, and run over. There were people everywhere, so they're very lucky that no one was trampled as well, or that the horse wasn't hit by a tram.
Please stop kicking her, please.
I'm now calling on Kristen Lee, Campaign Manager, Melbourne Against Horse-Drawn Carriages, to speak. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillors. I've been closely observing and researching Melbourne's horse-drawn carriage industry since 2013. My initial and sole motivation was out of concern for the animals involved. I quickly became aware that the issues extended far beyond that and that there was much public support for a ban. So I founded the group Melbourne Against Horse-Drawn Carriages with the aim of exposing the issues and raising them with the City of Melbourne and the state government so that they would finally be addressed. To be honest, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. This work has come at great personal sacrifice that I will not go into, but perhaps if screening my video in the full extent with the abusive operators had not been banned from this meeting, you would have had a better idea of what kind of people in the situation we are dealing with here. The video was in full emailed to the Lord Mayor and councillors earlier today, which I hopefully you took the time to watch. It provides only a fraction of the evidence myself and other members of the public have gathered to demonstrate that the cruelty and safety issues for both horses and humans caused by this trade are systemic and inherent and cannot be addressed by any kind of regulation, including the street trading ban. These drivers are absolutely out of control. It is not just a rogue few. The video shows illegal travelling on Swanson Street, illegal parking, U-turns and bike and use of bike lanes, travelling through tram superstops, running red lights and illegal street trading. In addition, the video shows plenty of incidents where horses and humans are injured or have come extremely close to being seriously injured or killed, which is unsurprising considering the poor and careless behaviour of the operators and the fact that the horses are flight animals and can spook easily. This is innate to their nature and cannot be changed through any kind of regulation. The video also shows operators engaging in violent, sexist, racist and threatening behaviour. These incidents are so appalling that they are the main reason why my video was not to be screened here this evening in full. One was to think, if this can't be even replayed in a public meeting specific to the issue, how bad must this look on our streets and how threatened and violated so many must feel? It shows a horse lying on the road being kicked and unable to get up, other horses down and seriously injured, unable to move, another innocent soul lying dead, covered in a blanket. There is also the image of a huge hole in the safety glass of a tram caused by a driver steering his horse straight into it as it passed at full speed. I hope councillors will consider that these are just the incidents we have captured ourselves or been sent by others who have bothered to take the time. We have heard of many others and we shudder to think just how many have occurred over the years that we and others will never learn of. I will never understand why these operators continue to be allowed on Melbourne's roads. Why should ratepayers and taxpayers continue to foot the bill with attempts to regulate a trade that is proven it is beyond regulation? Drivers have demonstrated that they will not be regulated, and even if they could be, the cruelty and safety issues are inherent. I myself am a huge supporter of small business, quite possibly because I was raised by a mother and father who dedicated the first 18 years of my life to their own. But just because someone is from a small business, it should never give them a free pass to endanger, abuse and threaten those around them whilst causing immense suffering and pain. City visitors are often devastated to see horses being used in such a cruel and archaic way, unable to graze and move freely, which is essential to their mental and physical well-being, frequently stressed as they are forced to negotiate all the obstacles as a busy city presents to them on hard, pain-inflicting surfaces. This trade is completely out of step with our international reputation. Cities across the globe continue to ban them from the streets for the exact same reasons we see occurring here. Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks for your submission. I'm calling on Councillor Leppett to move the motion.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I move the motion with a slight tweak to paragraph 6 to add the words "a representative of Yarra Trams." There it is. Thank you. That's the motion I move.
Thank you. And Councillor Ball is moving the seconding the motion. Thank you. Over to you, Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And thank you to all of the submitters who have presented to us tonight. I don't think we've seen a fully edited 3-minute video like that before. At a future Melbourne Committee or Council meeting before, clearly a lot of effort and a lot of deeply felt conviction on this issue. And I want to acknowledge the years of effort and data that's been collected and put towards this issue, because there are many, many people out there who have recognised that there's a issue here that needs to be dealt with, and perhaps it's government that needs to catch up. However, I also understand as a councillor that 11 councillors come at these issues from different angles, and it's been difficult to get consensus between the council and the state on what should happen and whether or not there is a problem. It might not be animal welfare that motivates an individual politician. It mightn't be public safety, it mightn't be the reputational damage of what happens when one sees something go wrong on the streets and what happens in the tourist trade, but it's got to be one of those, right? And I think we have more than enough evidence to understand now that the status quo simply isn't working. That on the world's busiest tram route on Swanson Street, with a record number of truck movements now and increasing due to metro tunnel works, that this is just a situation we cannot turn a blind eye to. Now, it is true that it's already illegal for horse-drawn vehicles to move up and down super stops and in and out of Swanson Street at most intersections. It happens anyway, and so perhaps we'd be in a slightly different situation if Victoria Police took a different attitude towards how the road rules were to be enforced. But we still go back to this problem that unless there's clear guidelines or rules, regulations from government about what is and isn't allowed and what will and will not be enforced, then we're going to continue to tolerate something that our public is very clearly saying shouldn't be tolerated. And we're going to be tolerating something that is public safety risks that are just far, far, far too high. We've seen enough evidence just presented to us in the last few minutes about what might happen if we continue to turn a blind eye to the situation that we have, and so we have to do something about it. But we can't act alone, we know that. The state is reluctant to legislate for changes to any law or any secondary legislation that might have knock-on effects further afield. And there is no consensus yet on whether regulatory or legislative changes are even required. Perhaps there is a change in the way enforcement regimes need to work. But surely we can all agree that the most important thing is that there's a consensus that's built between the state and the council on what should happen. We don't have that consensus at the moment, but I believe we have a moment in time now that is the best opportunity to date, with the most goodwill between state and council to date, to work towards that consensus. So without presupposing where this might lead, and without dictating where a forum might go, what it might conclude, whether or not there should be a flat-out ban or how large that ban should be, I wouldn't want to put words in the mouths of any councillors. Let's not presuppose the outcomes of that forum. This motion is about trying to seek the consensus with the state and key stakeholders and everyone who is directly impacted by any potential decision, so that we can recognise that we need to overcome the inherent public safety risks in the status quo and discuss solutions. in the spirit of cooperation and constructiveness and working towards an outcome that has addressed, recognised and fully mitigated these public safety risks. That's the purpose of the motion, and I implore my colleagues to support it in the interests of finding that constructive consensus with the state government.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Councillor Dr. Ball.
Thank you, Chair. I wish to thank and acknowledge everybody who has written to Council on this matter. We have had an extraordinary number of submissions, overwhelmingly against the trade. I think it's clear from this public response there's a demand for action, that the status quo cannot continue. This motion makes it clear that we cannot act effectively unilaterally as local government. We must get together with other levels of government and interested parties, as listed in the motion, who can have an effective part to play and input into what the best solutions can be. We cannot leave things as they are. The Yarra trams are educating the public all the time about safety concerns, reminding us that trams cannot swerve, and that if a tram driver was forced to brake very abruptly to avoid an accident, people inside the tram can be injured as well as outside. This is the busiest tram thoroughfare in the world, and we've seen from video and photographic submissions tonight how often horse-drawn vehicles are found on our tram lines and doing U-turns across the tram lines. So with a view to finding a workable and enforceable and effective solution, I support this motion and thank Councillor Leppett most sincerely for his work in bringing this to us, and I do encourage everyone to support it and commend all of the parties as they come together in the next 3 months to work with conviction towards finding effective solutions, as this motion seeks to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. This issue obviously is one that brings a lot of interest and many viewpoints. I'd like to commend Councillor Leppett on bringing this motion in its current form to Council. It is pragmatic and requests that the parties come together to consider a solution for what is and what we know is a multi-jurisdictional issue. I do want to just make a point around, you know, the safety issues raised here are significant, and I'm concerned for the security and safety for residents, visitors and road users alike. I just want to say that the endangerment of people in our municipality is never acceptable. I hope that we will be able to come to a final outcome in the near future around this. Thank you.
Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I would just like to draw attention to the background to this motion, which makes reference, quite rightly so, to the fact that these horse-drawn vehicle operators conduct a legitimate business in the city of Melbourne and their trade is legal. And I would like to express the view that now more than ever, we would not want to see legitimate businesses and small businesses done out of business. We know that this industry in particular is a very visible part of our visitor economy, that it is a draw card for many tourists, and it is considered to be an iconic part of tourism in Melbourne for many people. Having said all of that, I also agree with the other part of this background, which is that all of that is subject to these operators' compliance with road rules and other statutes, and no business in the city of Melbourne or elsewhere is indeed above the law. With all of that in mind, I support this motion because of the scope of it, which is that this summit is to be formed with a view to removing risks to public safety and overcoming significant gaps in the regulatory framework. It's clear that this is, as other councils have identified, a multi-jurisdictional issue. It's an issue that would benefit from discussions between these various groups, and I am happy to see that representatives of the commercial horse-drawn vehicle operators, as chosen by them, will be part of this summit. I, in those circumstances, support this motion, but I do so stressing that this summit should be limited to that purpose, and we should always be cautious about taking action that would result in an industry being wiped out. And although our attention has been drawn to those operators that may have acted in breach of road rules and other regulations, there is no doubt that there are operators who do comply with them. And I would be very disappointed if they were disproportionately impacted because of those who fail to comply.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Any other Councillor Lelou?
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Campbell, for saying that. And I think I'm very much of the same view as well. I think it holds no secret that I've always been a great supporter of the horse-drawn carriage, as they is much loved and iconic part of Melbourne in this day and age of when COVID-19 has really hit, especially the tourism industry. Has been hit the hardest, and for me, we need to do what we can to support the tourism trade. And again, this is a business legally, and there is a history of it. Now, I think in terms of yes, there will always be rogue traders, and I appreciate the evidence, and I would hope that if future ones that just come through, we do pass them on and we prosecute. But at the same time, you know, there are I know of who are working really hard to ensure they comply with the rules. And overall, they just want what they want to do is provide a service to the many tourists and visitors to this great city of ours in a different ways. You know, would I want to enjoy seeing the city on a tram or in a car? No, I wouldn't. And I always take, you know, my visitors who to Melbourne, and I take them to horse-drawn carriage because it is a great way to see Melbourne, to see the fact that we have this great city and the routes that they take. I note that the forum is one where everyone comes together, and as Councillor Leppard said, there is no predisposition on that, and I think that is quite important because it has to be a balanced act between and a fair fact between two parties. We cannot just let one view just be always be talking about. We need a balanced view where everyone has a chance to say things and to demonstrate and in an evidence way, so that it is a fair way to judge on this issue. So for that reason, that's why I will be supporting this forum, because just like Councillor Leppers mentioned, that there will be potentially things coming out, but also at the same time, it could be that we find this, you know what, this is the right way, and this might be, you know, it is quite important to Melbourne to have this, and, you know, I would really hope that, you know, we give every opportunity to hear the voices, to hear all those, and let them decide on it, because, you know, City of Melbourne is only one of many people who play jurisdiction in this area, and I wouldn't really hate for us to just be the ones kind of really making a particular view. Rather, we should be listening, as always, listening to all our constituents, all the people who use the city, visit the city, and people who also operate within the city, because we need everyone to ensure that to come out of COVID, we need everyone to be able to, you know, help us get the city back on track. So I will be supporting this, and I look forward to the outcome of this and how we can take this debate even further.
Any other speakers to the motion? I think that the speakers, just me adding to this discussion, I think that the speakers tonight have really canvassed the breadth of views that we would find in the community. I think why I am going to support this motion tonight and why I support another attempt at bringing the parties together is that as far back as 2009, there was actually an attempt to have a code of conduct. Well, there was a code of conduct was drafted. It was agreed. And the Victorian Horse-Drawn Vehicle Association also undertook to make that code mandatory amongst its members. Unfortunately, what we see is a continued flouting of laws and also of the code of conduct. And it concerns me that if there are rogue operators, and let's face it, every industry has bad apples, that regardless of laws and regulations and regardless of the industry itself attempting to improve the conduct of the operators of horse-drawn vehicles, we find that we have ongoing incidents of safety and cruelty. And so in supporting this motion tonight and supporting the forum, I'm really hoping that parties can come together with solutions that are achievable and realisable for the benefit of everyone, and that includes the horses. So we come into this, if this motion is passed tonight, with a lot of goodwill, but concern to ensure that we actually move to something that is enforceable and achievable, that is adopted and embraced, and that will satisfy the concerns and interests of all parties. So I'm going to be supporting this motion. If there are no other speakers, then I'm asking those in favour of the motion to please raise their hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. We come to agenda item 7.2, which is notice of motion, Councillor Jamal Hakim, supplying free sanitary products in council-owned facilities pilot program. We do have a speaker, Donna Stolzenberg. Donna, I hope that you are still on the line with us, our 2021 Victorian of the Year, and we're looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. Yes, I'm definitely still here. My name's Donna Stolzenberg, and I'm also the founder of National Homeless Collective, which is a grassroots charity that started back in 2015. One of the projects that we run is the Melbourne Period Project, which supports people experiencing homeless disadvantage, domestic violence, with the provision of sanitary items. I started the Period Project after becoming aware of a young woman sitting outside Flinders Street Station one night who was menstruating and had nothing to use. So I went and bought her some products and realised that there weren't any support services at that time for people experiencing period poverty. So the Period Project started, and we now support some, I think, 55 to 60 different organisations around Melbourne and Victoria. We actually run right through the entire country at the moment. Period poverty is a very degrading and humiliating situation that creates enormous barriers to participation and enjoyment of life for many people, and this includes school and work and also barriers to support services as well. Not everybody is comfortable connecting to services or council-run services. So having items in toilets and or, you know, other buildings is more beneficial for them, especially people experiencing their first day of homelessness or those who are recent prison released. In fact, we actually supply sanitary items to Dame Phyllis Frost Centre, so that those women who are exiting prison can have some sanitary items upon their release, because if it's not prison issued, then they're not allowed to take it with them. So we know that back in 2019, we saw the removal of the tampon tax when it was noted that it was not a luxury item, and which was on a federal level. Then on a state level in 2020, the Andrews government introduced tampons and pads in schools. What we would love to see is councils offering free sanitary items in council-run buildings. This helps to normalise the menstruation process and takes that stigma away and allows people to enjoy their life like everybody else. It also, this opportunity also provides job opportunities for women. We employ women to help us get these packs together. So it's local jobs, and those women are experiencing homelessness or recent prison release as well. We noted that in the last two major events Victoria had, which was the bushfires of 2020 and the COVID lockdown, that period and menstrual care was very overlooked, and it did cause enormous damage to many people who were requiring those sanitary items. So we highly recommend that the council support this pilot project and would very much like to see or have involvement in how it will be run. And thank you for the opportunity to present this evening.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you for your insights. Well, I'm calling on Councillor Hakim to move the motion. That's going to appear on the screen. And Councillor Dr. Ball to second that motion. Thank you. Over to you, Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Donna, for joining us and waiting so long tonight to bring your feedback as well. Very much appreciated, and I commend you on your work. I know this; we've been sitting here a little bit tonight, but please bear with me. I've got a few things to say that I'd like to add on this motion. I bring to you tonight a relatively simple motion, yet what I understand is a first in this country by a council. So it is important to recognise that this follows also exceptional advocacy and work in this space by so many women and others in so many arenas. Donna Stolzenberg, who we just heard from, Jane Bennett, Rochelle Courtney, and so many more, also follows the Victorian government's provision of sanitary products at schools, which is fantastic. Now, not only is this motion relatively simple, it is also relatively inexpensive, and one that has profound impacts for women and girls and people who menstruate. Simply, it asks that a trial program be held to provide free sanitary products through at least 6 council properties, with a view to expanding the program more broadly across the municipality. This trial is leveraging existing infrastructure and contracts, showcases the ability the city has to utilize our existing assets and increase the value in our municipality and improve the lives and well-being of residents, workers, and visitors alike. Now, I'd like to acknowledge that I am not a person who menstruates, and as such, I do not have a lived experience to share with you today. I am, however, wearing red, also carrying my uterus pin on my lapel in solidarity with women and girls and people who menstruate. I speak from evidence presented by so many groups, research, papers, and the stories shared with me by so many women and girls. So why should we care? And I will tell you why. Periods, we're talking about periods, and that's why. And period poverty. Period poverty is the term used to describe the inability to purchase sanitary products. It is real and significant, and it is a significant obstacle to health, comfort, and the ability to take part in basic activities that so many of us take for granted. Things like going to the shops, attending school, taking part in community activities that we hold so dear, and really importantly, being able to take part in work. The fact is, we know that there are persons in Australia today who use socks or newspapers or a rolled up toilet paper as a result of this. Now, that is not acceptable. Menstruation in and of itself is also stigmatized, and this is why I'm laboring on this point to discuss this in the public forum. So not only is it important for us to combat period poverty, it is important that we have conversations about period poverty, about menstruation, as well as
the health and administration management. I often refer to a book, it's commissioned by the Victorian Women's Trust, About Bloody Time, written by Karen Pickering and Jane Bennett. And if you'd indulge me for a few minutes on this topic, there are a few things in this publication that I want to share with you. It digs deep into menstrual taboo, where it exists, how it came to be, and why it's so resilient. Importantly, though, it asks women and girls about menstruation and provides us with an evidence base so that we can tackle the stigma surrounding menstruation. I'd like to share some of these key facts. So some key things that I've taken out of this book. 7 in 10 girls aged 12 to 18 years old had negative feelings about their period. Of all ages, 40% expressed predominantly negative sentiments when it comes to their period. Asked if prepared for the first period, over half said they were not. And asked about views on making menstruation better, 30% wanted to be able to talk more openly about periods. And almost 1 in 4 wanted access to menstrual products without feeling shame. Asked what would make it easier, older women wanted an end to menstrual shame. And overwhelmingly, respondents wanted boys and men to be more informed and more understanding. Now, imagine the stigma of all of this, and then being unable to participate in your community because you could not afford the products you need for menstrual hygiene. As a local council, we are the heart of it, the closest level of government to the day-to-day lives of the people who interact within our municipality. We operate and deliver services directly to diverse people, and we are therefore well positioned to enable this. We run public facilities, centres and toilets that people in our municipality use, and it is therefore within our direct ability to enhance the livelihoods, well-being, health and inclusion of those who would not otherwise have been able to take part in our municipality, whether for work or community interaction or any other reason. And that would be because of a result of not being able to access period products. So ultimately, all women and girls and people who menstruate are entitled to the respect, dignity and bodily autonomy and the belief in the integrity of their bodies. Access to period products is not a privilege, it is a right. It is about inclusion, means access to basic activities, capacity to take part in work and community for women and girls and for people who menstruate. They would otherwise be excluded. It is about that full realization of women and girls and people who menstruate so that they are able to participate fully and freely in our communities. Jane Bennett, in her submission to us on this motion, shared how this moment is reminiscent of 1902 when the first public toilets for women were built in the city. So we have a habit of leading the charge at the City of Melbourne to make the lives of everyone who lives, works and visits our great city better. And I hope that this is another step in that direction. And in this case, because it's about bloody time, I commend the motion to you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. To you, Councillor Dr. Ball.
Thank you very much. I particularly want to thank Councillor Hakim for taking the lead on this motion, and to our council officers who have embraced it. We're just delighted with their response, and it's important that Councillor Hakim has raised this for the practical purposes to which it is intended, and also to destigmatise discussion. As he has said, of menstruation. It's an essential, natural bodily function without which none of us would exist. This motion is about dignity and it is about equality. And, of course, it is about the scourge and disgrace of poverty in our society. Dignity is... many ascribe the basis of human rights, the idea being that human rights describe a life of dignity, a minimum standard to which we must all subscribe to ensure we all live with dignity. There are, of course, knock-on effects of period poverty which impact on other human rights. If women and girls and other people who menstruate are not able to participate fully in the life everyone else enjoys, and most especially in their education or in their employment or in other important cultural events, and simply to enjoy their recreational outdoor life and living freely as they would wish, without the very basic essentials of managing menstruation. It's also, of course, an issue of gender equality. There is no direct corresponding function or obvious correlation for men, but to take, I think, the closest example I can think of, we all need toilet paper, and we would never question that toilet paper should be provided in every toilet for every user, and it would be provided for free without question. We all need it, and everyone who menstruates equally needs these basic products to manage their life and bodily functions with dignity. I thank Councillor Hakim for this motion. This is an exciting first step, and as forecast, foreshadowed in this motion itself, I hope it will be a first step to other ways we can ensure to minimise period poverty, including through measures that are have less impact on the environment, such as reusable underwear, reusable menstrual products, and that other councils have trialled. I commend the state government for its leadership in our state schools in providing free products to students who menstruate. So I'm delighted to have a role in leading with these other actors on this issue, and I do commend it not only to us tonight but to all councils to do likewise and to develop and get ahead of us in how to make this a reality, eradicating period poverty. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I also want to congratulate Councillor Hakim for bringing this forward, and to Councillor Olivia Ball for supporting him. As new councillors, it's great to see these sort of initiatives being brought forward. I'm looking forward to voting in support of this in a moment. And, you know, I just think this is just one small but important way that we can make our city fairer. And let's face it, if blokes had periods, we would have done this decades ago. So tonight we're going to have a vote and hopefully take a small but significant step forward for equality and fairness in Melbourne.
Thank you. Councillor Cheng.
Thank you, Councillor Hakim and Councillor Ball, for what you've put forward. As a father of a three-year-old girl, I'm very proud that we are moving towards a society that is more equal and fair, and I'd like to thank you very much for putting this forward. I'm supporting this wholeheartedly, so just a thank you to both of you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Leloo.
I just wanted to congratulate Councillor Hakim and very passionate words. And I think when you said it's bloody well time, I think, you know, that is, it is so right. And also to Councillor Ball as well, for both two new councillors for their great work in this area. I don't really know this area that well. And so it was really enlightening for me to actually really know about it. You know, and as chair of the Finance and Governance Committee, you know, pilot program for approximately $10,000, you know, that is just a drop in the water, and I'm surprised we have not done that. And, you know, this is the things that we should really put forward, because it's a low-hanging fruit that, and it just means so much more to our community. And it's, so thank you for identifying, you know, this need, and you know, it's not about, I know it, so it's very rare that you know, no other council has picked up on this, and that we were the first. And I really do hope that after us and after this, that all other councils within Victoria and hopefully within across Australia also sees the benefit of this. And and I note that it's a 12-month pilot program, but, you know, to your words, Councillor Keane, bloody hell, like, you know, why can't we, why do we need a pilot for this? So hopefully we can do something more substantial from that pilot program. But again, we'll be willing to support this, and thank you again for bringing it up.
Thank you. Any other speakers to the motion? Well, I'm adding my 2 cents worth. I am going to be supporting this motion. Councillor Huckham, thank you. I know your leadership in your professional non-councillor life gives you expertise and insight into this issue and many others facing women. And so thank you for bringing it to council, to Councillor Bull for seconding it. And I think that notion of simple ideas and initiatives having significance and scale is apt for a program that will have immediate benefits, but will also address embedded and entrenched issues in our society. So multiple benefits, what's not to support? So thank you, and I'm looking forward to the vote, which I'm putting now. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. Well, this concludes the items of general business for consideration in open session. Councillors, are there any urgent items of business that you would like to consider this evening? None. Then that means that, just noting there were no questions to be raised in question time at the end of this meeting, so we can say thank you to all the members of the public who have participated and watched our meeting this evening, to our executive team for all of the preparation and for attendance, and to councillors, thank you. We're closing the meeting at 8:08 p.m.